That is the axis samadhi. That is where the things get very clear that every person is like just like the other. And we are not disturbed by the kilesas. The kilesas don't have any power in the state of axis samadhi. That's why we are free, and that's why we see clearly. The moment we come back from axis samadhi, and then you put up these images, and immediately feelings arise. Pleasant feelings for people one loves and unpleasant feelings for people one dislikes. But in the state of access samadhi, and this is why it's so important, not only access samadhi but also the deep state of samadhi, it objectifies things. It makes it really clear what things are. Where is it coming from? You know, we just have to ask ourselves, you know, what is happening when we come out? What is happening? Or why is it all this happening? It's only the power of the kilesas who try to trick us into thinking. This is this and this is that. This is good and this is bad. This is lovely and this is hateful. Or this is beautiful and this is ugly. While we are in the state of upachara samadhi, you know, where we still experience the world as it is. You know, the world is just like it is. And we have no feeling or no tendencies or not wanting towards this or not wanting that. We're just looking objectively as the things as they are. So where are, you know, why, what is the problem? Why are all these kilesas coming back into rain once we get out of the samadhi? And this is the path of investigation. We have to see how they work. We have to understand why they work and how they work in order to get rid of them. And to get rid of them, we cannot do it with samadhi, but we can only do it with investigation. Investigation of the body, because there it is where greed and hate are stored. An investigation of the feeling, it's the same thing. If you don't understand clearly in the back, you know, just move closer. Now talk a little bit more in this way, so you know it spreads out a little. So investigation is the thing that delivers us to freedom. This we should not forget. But that doesn't mean that we do not need samadhi. We do certainly need it. We need this objective mind. The mind that is clear, we need a sharp knife. If you want to do kitchen work, you know, if you have a blunt knife, you cannot do any kitchen work. We cannot cut anything out. We cannot cut the good thing from the bad thing. But if the knife is sharp, you know, it's a very easy job. That's why we train our chitta to get down and get down into samadhi and take a deep breath and get objective and or get very clear. It's like to sharpen our knife of wisdom. Once we get out, we do the investigation and then things become much more easy. We can easily cut out the bad things and easily, you know, remove the bad things so that they don't spoil the good thing. If you have bad meat in your body or bad flesh in your body, you know, you have to cut it out, otherwise it spreads through the whole body. And we can do that only when the moment we have an objective mind, or our mind is clear, or our mind is calm, and our mind can stay on an object of investigation for at least 10 or 15 minutes. So if you cannot stay with our Buddha for 10 or 15 minutes without getting distracted, you know, it's pretty useless to do investigation. Some people, especially in the West, you know, are trying, you know, forgetting about samadhi and just doing investigation. But all what they do is just thinking around, thinking about this and thinking about that. This is Sanya Sankara. This doesn't help. We really have to get at the point of investigation. We really have to see things as they are. And when we are in the state of Aksa Samadhi or Upachara Samadhi, we start to see things very clearly. As I said, you know, once we're in the storm and the rain and the hail, you know, and we find a glass house, then the glass house protects us from the impact of the rain, hail and storm. And the rain, hail and storm are nothing than the impact of the kilesas. And the kilesas are nothing than the outflows of the avijja. And avijja is the master. It's a master of magic. It's a magic magician, you know, who fools us and tricks us into believing this and that. So once we get out of this glass house, you know, the impact of the kilesas are coming back to us. And we are bothered as much as we have been bothered before. We only remember that while we were in Upachara Samadhi, that there was some kind of peacefulness and rest and some sort of happy state. So we should not forget this. The Eightfold Path is the Eightfold Path. And when I explain the Eightfold Path, I always explain it as Sila, Samadhi and Panya. So Sila is something, a prerequisite that all of us need. The monks have a higher Sila and the lay people have just the 5 precepts, or if they are willing to take on the 8 precepts, and they can take them on. This is prerequisite. We cannot, you know, while we are training ourselves, we cannot go against the Sila. We cannot go against the precepts, neither as a monk nor as a lay people or lay person. So this is clear, so that's why I don't talk about this anymore. And Samadhi is important. Samadhi is important, you know. Samadhi gives us the ability to concentrate on one object. Samadhi gives us or produces the mindfulness that we need, because without mindfulness we are not aware of things. And if we are not aware of things, we do not understand things. Whatever we investigate, if we are not mindful, you know, we do not understand things. It's like a physician A physicist watches an experiment, and he doesn't know the outcome, or he doesn't know what is going to happen. So if he doesn't have his attention or awareness or mindfulness on the spot to follow every kind of step of development, he will not understand the experiment. So if the process of investigation or if the process of observation takes too long, then in the middle comes a thought, I need to drink a cup of coffee, you know, or he thinks about this or that, or looks at a picture that is, and in that moment of mindlessness, you know, the important thing happens. So he has to do the observation or the experiment over and over again, until he can completely be mindful about every second of this experience. And then if he is mindful about every second of this experiment, or every mind moment of this experiment, he will understand it. And so do we have to do our investigation. We have to completely mindful, to completely being mindful every time while we observe one thing. So if we investigate the body or part of the body, if we are not mindful, you know, the things do not unhide. They're still hiding in places. If we are mindful all the time, we will see very clearly what it is all about. So that's why we have to do the experiment over and over and over again. And without mindfulness, and mindfulness is a very important key in our practice. If we are not mindful, then things take very long. If we are complete, or if our mindfulness lapses very often, our fruit of investigation will fall down, and everything and all that remains will be just, you know, thinking and memories. And that does not help. If you don't understand what is going on, We will never get a clue, or we will never be able to cut down the kilesas. This we have to know. This we have to take to our heart. So if our mind is restlessness, starting with investigation is not the proper thing. We first have to calm the mind completely down until there's nothing left. Once we get out of Upachara Samadhi or Apana Samadhi, we take on the investigation. We take on the investigation of the body or feeling and investigate them clearly. Feeling, you know, it's a very good object to observe while we are sitting, if you are sitting for a long time and feelings of pain come in. Otherwise, we observe the feelings, how they arise and cease. See them how they arise and see them how they cease and see them how they change. And we stay with the feelings. We do not think about the feelings, you know, why is this bad feeling coming in or why this is painful feeling coming in. We just stay or stick with the feeling. See it arising, see it changing, and see it ceasing. That's the way of investigation. We do not think about, you know, if this is a pleasant feeling or is this an unpleasant feeling or what is the cause of this feeling and how can we get rid of this feeling or how can we prolong this feeling. We just see it arising and ceasing within its own nature. We know about, when we are mindful, we know about the quality of the feeling. So we know it is painful or we know it is pleasant or we know it is unpleasant. We don't have to figure it out. We just know it immediately the moment the feeling arises, we know about the quality. It's just like when the breath arises, we know about the quality. If we care to take attention, if we care to be attentive to the breath, breathing in or breathing out, then we know about the quality. Because the one who observes or the one who knows about it. He knows about everything. Like when we open our eyes, we know about the things that are in our environment. Or there's somebody, you know, as long as we are not blind, we do see things. So we know that there's a tree or there's a cupboard or there's an animal or things like that. We don't have to conjure it up. We just know about these things. If we know in line with the truth, that is a different thing. For in order to know in line with the truth, we have to investigate. We have to investigate what is a tree and what is a column and what is a cupboard and what is earth and what is fire and what is water and what is air. This is the investigation. For investigation, we need to investigate the three qualities or the three basic characteristic tendencies of the whole universe. And these are anicca, anatta, dukkha. That means impermanence, the arise, change and cease. This is not me, that it doesn't belong to me, this is not myself. This is anatta, the principle of anatta. And the third one, that the moment it arises and ceases, you know, it will create some dukkha. Some restlessness or some pain or some suffering or whatever. These are the three characteristic tendencies that we can use for investigation of the different phenomena, be it the body or be it the feeling or. The other thing, when we use to investigate the body, then we can use the four qualities. It's called the four elements. And the four elements is the water element, the fire element, the air element, and the earth element. So earth means for... Huh?
Pressure.
No, it's not pressure. It's compactivity. Air element means for flow. Fire element means temperature. And water element means connectivity. So investigation of the five khandhas, investigation of the body, of the feeling, of memory and associations, of thinking and of consciousness is the thing that gets us or delivers us to freedom. If you really understand them in line with the truth. This we have to understand. But we have to understand that the Eightfold Path that gets us to the deliverance to freedom. The Eightfold Path, that are the three columns of Sila, Samadhi and Panya. If you want to build a house on one column, it's not going to be stable. If you build a house on two columns, it's not going to be stable. But the moment we build a house on three columns, it will be stable. So we have to develop all three factors. That means Sila, Samadhi and Panya all at the same time. It's not that we develop one of the factors and rise it up to the height so that the house that we build on, you know, will be very unstable. So we have, the moment we start investigation of the body or the five khandhas, or start investigation of our greed and hate, this will give us a clue for our morality, how good we are at our keeping the five moral precepts, and it also will develop some calm and some peacefulness, so it will give some rise to mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness and concentration also gives us some clue for investigation, and it will give us some clue for our sila. If you are not mindful, you know, we go against the five precepts very often. If you are mindful, we catch it very early. And sila gives us a protection, protects us from thinking about this and thinking about that, or feeling guilty or feeling bad because we didn't keep our sila. So when our sila is growing, then samadhi will get easier and investigation will get easier. We don't have a bad conscience and so on. So these three columns must be developed by and by at the same time. Now in the beginning, you know, we have a lack of samadhi and we have a lack of concentration. That's why we foster this first. We also have a lack in sila. That's why we're trying to investigate sila. That's why we're trying to keep our sila as perfect as possible. And as long as we are in this monastic grounds, we should do that as much as possible, to our best ability. Investigation then starts. Once our mind gets calm and it can concentrate on one object for at least 10 minutes or 15 minutes, the longer the better, then we start with the investigation of the body. We start with the hair of the head or the hair of the body, with the teeth, with the nails, and with the skin. We rip it apart, we take it, we look at it, you know, from outside and see for what it is. That means looking at it means closing our eyes and getting the inner view of the skin or the hair, and then we look at one of the hairs and look at, you know, where the hair comes from or where it grows out, and look at it. Look so that we get a clear image. Look how the hair becomes dirty, and when it is washed, how it becomes clear, and what is it all about? What does the change of style of hair change our characteristic tendency? It doesn't change it. But we do style our hair. We have it growing long, or we have to grow it short, or we cut it in this way, or we cut it in this way, just to make up a personality. A different kind of personality. What only changes, we have never asked. It changes only the look. And because the look is so important for us, the look of clothes, you know, having different or changing our clothes, or changing our style of hair, or changing or getting a sunburn or suntan, it makes it so important. Because we want to convey the idea of ourselves to other people. That's why we change, to make something out of ourselves that actually has nothing to do with ourselves. Or what does it have to do? You still think the same way, you still act the same way, and you still feel the same way. What has it to do with our outer clothes? What has it to do with our skin, with our hair of the head, or hair of the body, with our nails and teeth? But people in the world take it as so important so that they spend all the time, you know, polishing these things up. They use all their energies and resources to polish these things up and to style it according to what they want to be. In German we say clothes make people. So if you put on the clothes of the king, you will become the king. In the eyes of the others, you will be the king. Or if you put on the clothes of a government official or of a president or something like that, then you will be, in the eyes of the other people, a president. If a beggar puts on the clothes of a manager, then he will become the manager in the eyes of the people. See how important it is, our outer appearance. But what has the outer appearance to do? Like, for instance, with this beggar, what has the outer appearance of being a manager to do with his inner characteristic, inner tendencies? Nothing. He still will be a beggar, no matter what kind of clothes he wears. He will have the attitudes of a beggar, the laziness of the beggar, and so on, and so on. So why do we take so much effort in styling something that is just outside? Think about it for yourself. Why do we do it? Why do we want to make men, especially, why do we want to make the body strong or building up muscles and things like that? To attract, isn't it? It's our way of attracting. We want to be something else than we are. And this is the main concept of how Avijja works. It wants to fool us into being something else than we really are. And if we start, you know, if we continue doing this thing, if we start conveying an idea of what we are not, then we fool not only the other people, but we fool ourselves. And this is the way of Avijja. It tries to fool us into believing that we are something different. Most of us are fooled by that we are all good people. We develop ourselves, we are kind people, we do not have any greed and we do not have any hate. But we do have greed and we do have hate, because otherwise we would not be reborn. Without having hate and without having greed, we would not be reborn as a human being or any other being in the other realms. Be sure of that, be clear of that, and investigate, you know, where is your greed and where is your hate. Greed is not only greed. Greed is any form of wanting. I want this, I want to change this, I want to change that. This is greed already. Greed can be very fine or can be very subtle, and it can become very gross and very obvious. The same thing with hate. I don't want this, I don't want that. Until that, you know, one cannot stand the other person, or one has to kill off the other person. This is all forms of hate. Hate and greed are just containers for very subtle feelings of hate, and until the really crossest and deepest feelings of hate. And it's the same thing with greed. It's a subtle feeling of greed. I just want this. You know, when I sit in meditation and I just want to get up. This is also a form of greed. Wanting this and wanting that, not wanting this and not wanting that. So, and there we can see it. So be honest to ourselves. This is what we have to be. This is the first step for investigation. We have to be honest to ourselves. No matter what, you know, let's stick it up. There's a lot of hate within us and there's a lot of greed within us. Let's see it with our own eyes and be objective towards it. Let's accept it, that this is all within us. Just accept it. And once we have accepted, we can counteract it. The greed we cannot follow, and the hate we do not need to follow. We can replace the greed, or we can replace the hate. The greed we can replace with a gesture of generosity. And the hate we can replace with a gesture of loving kindness. loving kindness towards this person that we do not like. But first of all, we have to be honest. And we all have greed and hate. So be sure of this. The only person who doesn't have any more greed and hate is the Anagami. And the Anagami will not be reborn in any kind of realm. He will not be reborn in any heavenly realms, or in any hell realms, or in any human realms or animal realms. He has only five that are above the heaven realms. There are five realms reserved only for the Anagami. Because any heavenly being has to come back down to the earth or has to come back down to the hell realms. Once its life is over, it will be reborn in a new area. It will be reborn in a new realm. That holds for any kind of being. We know in our human realm, the life is pretty short. So, we know that, but in the heaven realm or in the hell realms, the life might be very long. So people tend to forget that they are actually going to die. And they are actually going to be reborn in another kind of realm. So make sure. Make sure that you are honest with yourself. As long as you are reborn in any kind of this realm, you all have greed and hate. Because greed and hate are the source for being reborn. And greed and hate, and that's why we investigate the body, has its foothold in this body. In this body of the six senses. That's why we have to investigate this body completely. From inside to outside, from top to bottom, from bottom to top. From outside to inside. Up and down. We have to take it into parts, bits and pieces. We have to put it out and see what is this body like. What is the body and what are the parts of the body. Once we put only out the parts of the body, where is the body? Or where is I? That's the question. The identification with these things or with these parts of the body disappear completely. When we do this exercise correctly. But this is only for helping us to get rid of the identification that the citta and the body are one and the same thing, like the identification of a person who is born in a car and will die in a car, that the car and the driver are two different things. If somebody is born in a car and dies in a car, of course he thinks that he and the car is one and the same thing, because he has never stepped out of the car. And this is the same thing with the body and the citta. If we understand that the body and citta are two different things, that the citta is responsible for this body or driving this body or wanting this and wanting that, then we understand it very clearly. Then we can reduce the function of the body to the functions of the body and the function of the citta to the function of the citta. Investigation is making things clearly, is making things, separating, dissecting things into bits and pieces and making clearly this is the function of the body, this is function of the citta, this is the function of greed and this is function of hate, and these are the kilesas and these are not the kilesas, this is dhamma. We have to understand clearly, we have to separate things clearly. And this is what we have to learn, and it's a completely new skill. We cannot learn it within books, we can only learn it with our own experience. By going in. Going inside to this body, looking at the hair of the body or the head of the hair, or the hair of the body and the teeth and the nail. What happens to the nail if you do not take care of them? They get dirty and grow long. What happens to the hair that gets dirty and long? Where is all this dirt coming from? It's not only coming from outside. When we hang up our clothes outside, and keep it there for 4 or 5 days, it will not stink. But when we just put it on the body for 2 hours, so where is this dirt coming up? It's not up from the air. The dirt is not coming up from there. Only the little few particles like dust and water, this is coming from outside. So the main filth is coming from inside. So, think about it. See it for yourself. So what is it? If all this filth is coming from inside, what does the body really look like? Think about it very well. investigate it very well. Where is all this thing coming out? Whatever we put on the body is very nice, and whatever guts out of this body or comes out of this body is ugly and dissatisfying. So why do we put up with this body? Ask yourself, why do we put up this body? We have to carry it around, you know, we have to carry it onto mountains, we have to carry it out on the road, and it is a heavy burden. Why do we put up with this body? Once we see where this dirt is really coming from, once we truly understand whatever we put into the body, and especially, you know, being it food and being it drinks, and what comes out of this body, what does this body make of this food? Something that is pleasant has 100 different tastes and 100 different colors comes out as one taste and one color and one stink. So why do we put up with this body? Ask yourself, why do we put up with this body? If it wouldn't be for the senses, if it wouldn't be for the six senses that are originated in this body, nobody would ever take up the burden of this body. So we have to clearly understand this. First, before we have to understand that this body is filthy, that this body is a heavy load on us. This is one understanding. And the second understanding that we have to gain, and this is not only this, these understandings come not only by knowing. We have to see it for ourselves. The second understanding is that we want the six senses. That means that we want to see, want to hear, that we want to smell, that we want to taste, that we want to touch and want to think. And that's why we take up the burden of the body. Because it gives this facility, or it facilitates these six senses. This we have to understand clearly, really clearly, and we have to investigate and investigate until we really understand it clearly. Until the understanding takes place within our hearts. That's why we cannot read about these things. The reading will just take an understanding in our brain, and everybody says, oh yeah, you know, of course it's sure, you know, this body is filthy, you know. But that doesn't reduce the greed for this body. The understanding has to take place in our hearts. So we really have to see it with our inner eyes. That all the dirt is coming out of this body, and whatever we take in, whatever we put in is very nice and very comforting. And whatever is coming out is really disgusting. So next time what comes out, you look at it closely and tell yourself, this is coming from this inside of this body. Have a closer look. Look at the shit, you know, smell the shit, you know, and touch the shit. You touch the food with your hands, you know, that goes into the body. Why can't you touch the shit, you know, that comes out of this body? Little children don't have this, this objection against it. They touch it, you know, they even put it in their mouth bag. But we as adults, we have incorporated this idea that this is something really bad. And we have to get rid of this idea. So we have to understand it. So we have to teach our heart. We have to train our heart. And sorry to say, you know, we cannot train our heart by learning a lot of about these things, by hearing about these things. We have to see it with our own eyes. We have to make the experience that this is really filthy, that this is really ugly. Once we make this experience with our own heart, the heart lets go. Like the moment we touch the fire with our hand, we immediately retract the hand because it's burning hot. Nobody, you know, takes, you know, on its own free will puts his hand into the fire until it is burned up. Nobody. And so this is the function of the heart, because it understands that the fire is hot and destructive. So we have to see that the fire of the kilesas are hot and destructive. The fire of our views and opinions we have about us is destructive and hot. But we have to see it with our own experience. We have to see it, and we have to understand it with our own experience. Once the heart really understands it, this is the end of our investigation. This is the end. Once the heart understands it, it just lets go on its own accord. This is the function of the heart. It has been fooled by the kilesas for such a long time. Now we have to take off this fooling. We have to take off this layer of delusion to make it clear and understand, to let the heart see and understand for itself what the things are. So we have to take it. So that means we have to teach the heart. We not only can learn, you know, get out this idea that we can, if we read a lot of books or if we can learn a lot of different teachings, that we will understand. Now, this is one understanding that takes place in our mind, and we'll just form another few opinions and another few views that are destructive for our own practice. It's not that we have to form opinions and views and understandings that take place in the mind. No, we have to make the heart understand. And this heart understanding is something that takes place in the heart, and it cannot be doubted. The understanding of the heart is something that we can say, yes, it happened, or not, no, it didn't happen. This doesn't affect the heart. Doubt doesn't affect the heart. The heart knows. So we have to teach. When we do our investigation, we have to teach the heart until the heart understands. Once the heart understands, whoever comes, you know, and says, we have not done this experience, or this experience is not important, it doesn't matter. Because we ourselves know. We ourselves have made this experience, and we ourselves understand the value of this experience. That's the difference between view and opinions, or understanding that takes place in the brain, and understanding that takes place in the heart. Understanding that takes place in the brain, maybe we can keep it, or we can upgrade it or upkeep it for a long time, maybe for 10 or 15 or 20 years, and then somebody comes to us and says, this is wrong because of this and this and this, and he convinces us, and this our idea collapses. And that cannot be done with the experience of the heart. The heart, the experience that takes place within our heart, cannot collapse. The whole world can come on to us. We are a single-minded person. We have made the experience in the whole world. 60 or 6 billions of people come us and say what our experience is wrong. The heart knows that the experience is right. And this is the value of teaching the heart. Whatever book we then read, or whatever views and opinions of other people and other teachers we hear, we know that they are wrong or they are right. Because we have made the experience within our own heart. And that's why it's so difficult to train the heart. So we have to teach the heart, we have to observe it over and over and over again. The same experiment. So when we look at the skin, we have to look at the skin maybe for the next 4 or 5 or 6 years. Until we really understand it. Or we have to understand the function of the stomach, or the function of the lungs, or whatever and or whatever. Or the growing of the hair, or the hair itself. When we cut off our hair, you know, it is just like straw. But once, as long as it is on our body, you know, we love it. We think it's so smooth or silky or whatever. Especially when we washed it fresh and, you know, put some conditioner on it, then it feels so nice. But what it actually reduces to, what? Feelings. And the objective is the body. So see the body as the body, and feeling as the feeling, sanya as sanya, sankhara as sankhara, and vijnana as vijnana. That is the Satipatthana Sutta. See the body in the body. See the feeling in the feeling. What is it? See the citta in the citta, and the dhamma in the dhamma. So this is the path of investigation. We really have to understand. And not, you know, if you do the experiment three times, the mind really grasps an understanding and you think it is gone. And you think it is finished. This is not the understanding. Immediately doubt. Maybe this understanding is not right. And once you can doubt it, you know it's not a true understanding. It's not the understanding of the heart. The heart cannot doubt. The heart knows. It has just the quality of knowing. It doesn't doubt itself. The kilesas are the one who doubts. The kilesas say, "Oh, this practice is too difficult. Don't even bother to do it. Or this practice is not leading anywhere. Don't even bother to do it. Or now I'm too tired." That's the kilesas. And the kilesas are the fangs of avijja. And there are lots of fangs. And we encounter them every moment. This we think we know. This we think we understand. This we think we do. Or this we think is worthless. And this we think is worthwhile. It's only views and opinions. It's nothing else than sanya or sankara. Just see the things as they are. Sanya is sanya, sankara is sankara, vedana is vedana, rupa is rupa. The body is the body, feeling is feeling. Memory and associations are just memory and association. They do not change the truth. Thinking is just thinking. But how are we delighted with thinking? Or how are we delighted with seeing something new? How are we delighted with hearing something new? And how are we delighted with lots of memories? And how unpleasant we feel when we have these kinds of thoughts? And how unpleasant we feel if we have this kind of memory? Or how unpleasant do we feel when with this kind of feeling? Because we are attached to it. This is that what creates the dukkha. If we just see the things as they are, arising and ceasing and changing constantly. And we see them, that they are not me, that whatever I observe cannot be myself. So the pain that I observe or the pain that I investigate, who is the one who investigates and what is the pain? There are two different things. Let's remember this. Let's always remember this. This is not me, that doesn't belong to me, this is not myself. When anything comes in strong, let's use this formula. That's the first thing to get objective. That's the first thing to get a hold of. Because normally we think I'm in pain or I'm dissatisfied or I am this or I am that. I'm tall, I'm beautiful, I'm ugly, I'm happy, I'm discontented and so on. But that there is only discontent, there is only happiness or there is only the body or that this is only memory. Who is the one who takes note of this memory? Who is the one who observes this body? And when we put the body in front of our eyes, or when we look at the mirror of the body, in the mirror of our body, then we see something. And then this, we say, this is me. What has it to do with me? Who is the one who observes this image? Who is the one who observes this feeling? Who is the one who observes or who knows about this thought? And who knows about this feeling? Or who knows about this memory? Who is this one? We have to retract to this one. Because this is the natural functioning of the citta. The one who knows. He knows all these different phenomena. As I said, you know, when we look at the tree, you know, outside, we wouldn't call ourselves this tree. We don't say, I'm tree. But we immediately say, I'm disappointed. Or I'm happy. Or I'm discontented. Why do we do this? It's just the same thing as the tree outside. It's just something that we know about. So let's go down to this point. Let's go down to this understanding. And see it arising within ourselves. See the thing that knows about it. And see the object known about it. And once this is clear, that there's one who knows about the object, and there's an object observed, or an object known about it, that these are two different things. Make sure that you understand this, or make sure that the heart understands this. And then you can investigate this. Then you can investigate pain for what it is. That's just pain. Or you can investigate the body, inside or outside, for what it is. Just make sure that you understand. Anicca, anatta, and dukkha. And dukkha is just because we take on this object as ourself. We take the body that we see in the mirror, or the image of this body, as ourself. And that's why we attach to it. So when the hair fall out, you know, we attach to it and say, oh, I'm bald. But what happened? There was an image that we see that we have, that there are few more hairs. So when the tree gets off the leaves, you know, when the leaves of the tree fall down, we do not get upset. But when our teeth fall out, or when our nails get dirty or too long, or when our hair falls out, then we get immediately upset. Or when we develop some scars, or we cannot walk, and so on, and so on, and so on. Because we are attached to these things. We are attached to Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. That's, for instance, that's why we have to do investigation to understand the proper way. We have to understand Rupa is Rupa, Vedana is Vedana, Sanya is Sanya, Sankara is Sankara, and Vijnana is Vijnana. We have to understand. And whatever happens in this universe, we can put back into one of these categories. Okay, this was a feeling, okay, this is feeling. This was a memory, okay, this is memory. This was a thought, okay, this is thought. And this is the body, okay, this is the body. Observe it as it is. And who knows about it? It's just the quality of knowing, the quality, knowing quality of the heart. So make this clear. Make this distinction clear. Whenever you investigate, make this distinction very clear. That there is one who knows, and there is one, an object known about. And the object known about cannot be the same thing as the one who knows about the object. Oh? Make this clear. But because of our attachment, because of sankhara, we mix it all together. That's why it comes out, I'm feeling depressed, or my meditation is not going anywhere. Who says this? What is meditation anyway? It's being mindful of our object observed. And as long as we are mindful about our object observed, how can this meditation go wrong? Who tells us these things? Who tells us all these things that come up in our practice? It's wrong understanding, it's wrong interference, inference. So get this clear. When we start investigation, get this clear. But we can only start investigation when our mind is calm, when our mind is objective, so that it can separate the object known and the knower of the object. Separate these things, and then observe them. Dissect this object until you really understand it, until the heart really understands it. There's no work more important than the work of sitting in samadhi or walking chankram. This is the work of the practitioner. Every other kind of work that we have to do while we are in this monastic compound, we do quickly, without talking, and mindfully. To have enough time to go back to our original work. And our original work is just sitting either in samadhi, or sitting and doing investigation, or walking chankram. That means walking meditation. While doing walking meditation, it's either samatha, it's either calm meditation, or it is investigation. Don't mix both these things up. Samatha is samatha, and vipassana is vipassana. Vipassana is inside, and it's not samatha calm. So when we do calm meditation, we just do calm meditation. The only exception is when pain is coming and becoming bothering and we are not able to keep enough attention on our breath or our main object, then we can do switch to investigation. That is the only exception. Otherwise, calm meditation is calm meditation. So samadhi is samadhi. And vipassana, insight is insight. We do not mix these things up. When we sit down, then we decide, okay, now we do calm, or we do vipassana. And when we do vipassana, then this whole session is devoted only to just one object. We want to understand the true nature of this object. Be it the outside, be it lumma, kesa, naka, tanta, tacho. That means just hair of the head, hair of the body, teeth, skin, and nails. Then just keep on one of these objects. So if you investigate nails, then for the whole session, investigate nails and nothing else. Don't let the mind go into another subject. Or if you investigate the inside of the body, like the lungs or the stomach or the intestines or this or whatever, or the blood or the vessels or whatever, then just keep on investigating this one object. Don't switch to another object. See it clearly with your inner eyes. Once you see it clearly with your inner eyes, dissect it. Look what it is made out. And there you can bring in the four elements. The four elements of water element, fire element, earth element, and air element. And everything that exists in this universe is made out of these four elements. So if we understand the four elements within our own body, we understand the four elements within this whole universe. Because everything is composed of the same four elements. Everything is composed of earth element, water element, fire element, and air element. So if we understand it in one object, we understand it in all objects. This is the path of investigation, and this is the path when we start investigation, we start with the body and feeling. That means bodily feelings. Because the body, as I said before, is the root of greed and hate. Is the flower pot with the earth. You have to destroy the pot so that the flower of greed and hate or the tree of greed and hate can be destroyed, can be dried out and not be regain life in any form or not grow in any form anymore. If you cannot destroy this body, and what I mean is not physically destroying this body, but destroying all the views and opinions we have about this body. That's what it means to destroy this body of God, where the tree of greed and hate root into. And with this, I end my talk. Okay? Now you know what to do. Don't allow the kilesas to come into and say, this is important, that is important, or this needs not to be done, or I don't need to investigate the body, I understand it already. Then you know you haven't even really understood, you really haven't even started. When you really start investigating the body and you really do it correctly, then feelings of disgust and even sometimes strong anger can come. And that means you are on the right source. Because the kilesas produces anger or disgust only when you are really going against the grain. So if you do the investigation correctly and there's a lot of hate coming up, then we first need to learn to deal with this hate. And then we know at the same time that we are on the wrong thing, that we are on the right path. Okay? That's for the moment, start doing your work. And as I said, the work of practitioners that are in this monastic compound are sitting and either doing samadhi or investigation or walking. This is the only work. And the rest that we have to do to feed our body or to keep the body healthy, you know, let's do it quickly. mindfully and without talking. That's the way that this monastery is kept for 40 or 50 years. That's the spirit of this monastery. It's very simple. And when we do our work, even when we go on Bindabad, we do it quickly, not talking, and mindfully. When we eat, we do it quickly, not talking, and mindfully. And when we do the chores, then we do it quickly, not talking, and mindfully. That's the way it's done, and it is done because to give us the most time for our real work. And the real work is sitting in samadhi, or sitting in vipassana, or walking chongkrom, doing either vipassana or samadhi. Don't mix up samadhi and vipassana. Don't mix up calm with insight. Just do one at a different stage. Now it's insight, now it's samadhi. And when you do insight, don't switch the subject. Just look for a subject that you're interested in when you start investigation. Either it can be feeling that came up, you know, and then start with feeling. Unpleasant feeling or feeling of pain. Or look through the body and just pick out the object that most interests you, that you want to understand. And then you stay on this object for the whole session. Be it 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, or 6 hours. You do not switch the subject. Until you see it clearly in front of your eyes, and then you can dissect it, and then you can decompose it in its components, or make whatever you want. Open it up, look at its function, look at this or look at that. Whatever comes into mind at that time. But it has to be the same object. Understand that? And with this, I leave you to your work. Yes. 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 No. In the beginning, when we sit down, and we see, you know, the moment we sit down or we start walking, we see if the mind is restless or not restless. If it's not restless, we can start with investigation. But if it's restless, we have to do samadhi. And we do not do samadhi until the mind is calm and then do investigation. We, for this one session or for this 2 hours that we determined ourselves to do, then we just do samadhi. And after we come out samadhi, and our mind is really concentrated and it can stay on object, then the next session can be investigation. Okay? Don't switch within one session, you know, while you're sitting, you know, first, you know, 5 minutes make the mind calm and then go. This, we have to understand what is what. This is calm and this is investigation. Or this is the body, or this is feeling, or this is memory or association, and this is thinking. We have really to understand. There are not a lot of things we have to understand, but we have to understand what is what. So calm is calm. And insight is insight. And insight normally makes the mind pretty restless because it has to think about. It has to think about this object, you know, what it produces, where is the dirt coming out, and so on, and so on. Or what is it made of? Made of. What goes in and what comes out. Be it an object or organ in the body, or be it the whole body, or be it part of the body, whatever. Or dissecting the body and putting it in bits and pieces in front of us to understand what is the nature of the body. Or reducing the identification with the body. That we and the body are two different things. Or the chitta and the body are two different things. Whatever you want. Don't mix it up. Because then, after a while, the mind, the moment the investigation gets difficult, you know, the mind switches to calm. And we don't get anywhere and we don't see. If we do not train it, you know, if we do not separate it very clearly in the beginning, in the end it will fool us. Because once we train, you know, to switch from samadhi into vipassana very quickly, then the moment the kilesas get undermined, they will switch into samadhi, and we don't even notice it. That's the reason why we should develop one thing at a time, so to be able to clearly to understand what we are doing. Okay? So, now I leave you up to your work and hope it will bear some fruits. It's up to you. It's your effort and your determination you put into this. Cut out these outflows. Cut out the going into past and the going into the future. Once you have that, cut out all the feelings that come, the memories, and so on and so on. And then you will be presented with just this one object of investigation or just this object of calm meditation. And then it's easier and the mind really gets calm. But if you think about this world, outside world, you know, more and longer, if it still exists when we come out, or if it doesn't exist, or if our family has gone down, or if our country still exists or not, then we will never get a peacefulness, or we will never get peaceful impression. Don't worry about the world. You will be surprised the moment, even after 3 months, the world will just will be the same. Don't even worry about it. Worry about the citta, how calm it gets, or how many insights it will receive. This is the thing that we have to worry about. Not about the world, or about even our parents, or our family, and so on, and so on. Or our state, or our affairs, and so on. While we are here, we have the sole opportunity to completely shut out the outside world. And I advise you to take this opportunity until the day you go and leave this monastery. And then you can, I promise you that the world comes back as it was. It won't have changed. But your mind has changed, or your attitude towards the world hopefully has changed. So you see things more clearly and see things much more easier, and it doesn't get into your way. You're not upset as much as you have been before. But it all depends on your effort and determination to do the practice and do as much practice as possible. So sleep little, eat little. And that's always, you know, activating the mind, activating the Dhamma. When we eat too much, we get too tired. We get too lazy. When we sleep too much, we get too dizzy. And we want to sleep even more. And when we have enough food, we want to even have more food. But if we have just enough, or just have half of it, half of the sleep we need and half of the food we need, we are very active. The mind is getting very active. So, take this opportunity and do your best, and do not engage in any kind of activities. There are little activities here in the monastic compound, but even these little activities, do not engage. Just keep to yourself and do the practice. Okay?